The sounds of that little theme song would introduce us to another Blind Like Me show. Yours truly, Phil Barr. Remember those? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. I saw one of those the other day, read one of those the other day. Anyway, welcome to Blind Like Me. It's just kind of a silly day, so we're going to just say silly things. What I want to do is start off by saying, good evening, sport fans. I've never gotten to say that on the radio. I've said a lot of things on the radio, but I've never gotten to say that. Who cares? Anyway, welcome to Blind Like Me. Let's see. I wanted to tell you about, our email address. If you have listened to the show before, what we do is we talk to blind folks from all walks of life, to blind people who are dealing with this thing we call blindness, with the blind experience, and are actually being successful at having a good life, at maybe raising children or holding down a job or doing something else. We've talked to blind people who are doing all kinds of things, and I'm still amazed at some of the things they do. We don't necessarily need blind people who have done extraordinary things. We need blind people just who are dealing with it. Deal with it. That's what they used to tell me when I was a kid, and I guess they were right, you know. Because that's what we're looking for, is blind people who can just deal with it. We want to, as soon as we get, and we're working on getting some underwriting money, some money to fund some things that we'd like to do. One of the projects that we would like to do, every blind person I've ever met, and I'm sure if you think about this, this is true, has a story. Some story, some crazy, silly thing that happened to them, it wouldn't have happened had they not been blind. Something silly, like my friend Gene Ellis over in San Antonio tells this story about going to some big formal party of some kind, something that she went to, and they had a buffet line. Geez, I hate those, don't you? Just something you have to deal with. My wife used to take me to the cafeteria. They closed in Lufkin. I was so happy when they closed. Don't tell her that. Anyway, I don't have to go through the buffet line. I hate those. But cafeteria is not so bad because she actually told me what they had. It wasn't too bad. Anyway, buffet line at this cafe. My friend Donna Jean Ellis over in San Antonio said she got some things on her plate, and she was walking across to where she thought tables were. Somebody was leading her across, and she noticed it. As she's walking along, people kept taking things off her plate. And she got almost to her table, and someone said, "Dear, you've picked up the sandwich plate," which is what she'd done. They had little finger sandwiches, and she'd picked it up. So stories like that. I've got a couple, and I'm sure you have one. And if you know, have blind friends, I'm sure. What I want to do is set up a line, a telephone line. We can't do this today because it would cost prohibitive. But in the near future, set up a line where you can call in and tell those stories. Tell me those stories. Keep them to a couple of minutes and identify yourself. Tell us who you are, where you're from, first names only, and tell your silly blind story, and put a program together of those stories. I think it would be funny. I think it would be entertaining. I think to people unfamiliar with the blindness experience, it would be educational also. So be thinking about that, because within the next few weeks, we hope to have that set up where you can call and actually tell your story in your voice, and if you had 25 of those, that'd be 2 minutes apiece. That'd be 50 minutes. That'd be enough to do a program. Anyway, that's something to think about. So think about your personal blind story that you'd tell. All right. Well, let's get into our interview today with Dr. Bob from Tyler, Texas. All right. Are you ready?
We have a gentleman here with us on Blind Like Me that I've known for 47 years.
47 years.
He and I went to school very briefly together. I don't know if I was the reason he left, but he didn't stay long at the
No, Texas. You were not the reason I left. I gave it some thought, but then I ruled you out. I decided I'd leave for other reasons.
He left the Texas School for the Blind. We're talking about a gentleman who's known all over Northeast Texas. We knew him as Robert Peters. He's now known as Dr. Bob.
UT Austin lowered their standards and gave me a PhD.
Gave you a PhD? I'll bet they gave it to you, all right.
Oh, yeah. I paid them $6.12, and it came in the mail.
Just like that, huh?
Yeah, just like that.
Well, as you were saying, you were born, Dr. Bob has accomplished a lot of things, and we're going to talk about all that, but let's get some kind of background. You were born in 1941, you say?
Yes, sir. Born in Tyler, Texas, Smith County, June 2nd, 1941. I grew up in Tyler, and I have always thought, you know, when I look at, and I guess everybody who gets our age thinks that the world is going to the bad place in a handbasket.
Really?
But I think I grew up in an ideal time, at an ideal place. I grew up in a small town. Tyler at that time had about 25,000 people. I had a brother. A little brother came along about 4 years. I was 4 or 5, I guess, when he was born. We lived in a typical small town neighborhood.
Both parents?
Both parents. My daddy was a self-taught CPA when you could teach yourself.
Yeah, and get a job doing it.
Get a job doing it. He was home when I was young. It was during World War II, because my daddy was one of the handful of individuals who managed to serve out his military obligation in state military service. He was living in Tyler during the oil field, and they had the East Texas oil field under martial law for most of the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So my daddy, having patrolled the oil fields with the Texas State National Guard for several years, he did not have to go into the service during the war because he'd served out his obligation. So, you know, two parents, both grandparents, one set of grandparents lived directly behind us. Just had a little fence I had to climb over, and there they were. That's how I grew up.
Let me just ask you this. Did you ever have any vision at all?
Yes, I did. I was born about 3 weeks post-mature, and I had the inheritance of glaucoma, but they believe that had I been born on time, the glaucoma would not have materialized. So I had glaucoma. They had to remove one eye when I was about 6 weeks old. And I had probably, 20/60, 20/70 in the other one.
Mm-hmm. So age 13, life was, I hate to use this word, but life was pretty normal for little Bob Peters.
Yes, I think it probably was. It was pretty good. We, in 1952, when I was 11, we had a little bit of a glitch. I had a little bit of a flare-up of the glaucoma, which they corrected by surgery, and I lost some vision after that. It was not as good post-1952 as it was pre-1952. And then in January of 55, I had a basketball accident, and that started a procession of events that resulted in the complete loss of the vision. I had detached retina, and they did it, and I had to go to, at that time, they were only doing retinal detachment surgeries in New York and San Francisco, And so I went to New York and spent about a month in hospital up there and came back home. And we were they were debating whether to send me home on the train or on the aircraft. And they were fearful if I came in on the train that the surgery, which was successful, would have been undone. So I flew home. And this is one of those, you know, little, I guess, coincidences of life.
Mm-hmm.
The station master at what at that time was called Idlewild Airport, which is now JFK, was the brother of the person who was one of my teachers in Tyler.
Really? That's amazing.
So he got me on a flight to come back, and I missed it because the taxi was late getting to the field.
Well, you weren't by yourself in New York.
Daddy came up to get me. He brought me up, and then he left, and I stayed there for, well, I think it was about 3.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. I stayed there by myself, and then he came up and got me. And so, at any rate, going back out to the airport, we missed the plane. So I had to wait, got on another one. Well, the one we were supposed to have ridden landed in a cornfield 2 miles shy of the airfield at Springfield, Missouri, and everyone on board was killed. We flew through strong thunderstorms several times, and the net effect was it was quite, you know, quite turbulent ride, and the retina re-detached. So the effects of the surgery were undone.
But you were alive.
I was alive to tell the tale. It was quite a plane ride. This was an EC-7.
Let me go through this again. The plane you were going to get on crashed.
It crashed. Everybody got killed.
And everyone got killed. And the plane you got on experienced turbulence, and you lost. The surgery was undone.
Yeah. And this I hadn't thought about this in years.
One would.
But you
got home as totally blind.
Well, not quite.
Yeah.
I had the vision was blurry. So then they discovered that for some reason a cataract had grown across the lens. And so in October, I believe it was, of 55, I go back to the Big Apple and stay in hospital about 3.5 weeks. And they removed the cataract, and I come back home. And then they were going to do a reattachment of the retina again in a few months later. And the retina began tearing, so they stuck me in bed. And then I go back to New York in 56, and they do a surgery. And we do not know if it was successful or not, because shortly after the surgery, the eye hemorrhaged. And Lee and I was shooting blood out kind of like a water gun. And so they stitch up the hemorrhage. You know, I'm laying on this table here, and this guy's laying on top of me, so I don't run away, I guess, because they didn't have time to put me to sleep or anything. And so they stitch up the hemorrhage, and but that's pretty well shot it. About a year, I still had light perception after that. And about a year after that, the retina began to deteriorate, and atrophy, I think, is the word they use. And so, you know, I had lost it completely by about May of 57, and it has remained completely lost ever since.
All right. Well, we've got you to age 13 now.
I got me to age 16, actually.
16, and we've got you blind.
Yeah.
So I guess it would probably be an expedient time to take a little short pause and run a couple of commercials and be back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me.
Thank you. about blind folk. Information you'll probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Don Patterson.
You know, as a proud member of the blind community for 60 years, sometimes I'm still surprised at the things that blind people will attempt and the things that blind people accomplish. And I ran across an interesting organization quite by accident, and it's called Ski for Light. And this is a nonprofit group that I think they even have some international acclaim. And they provide week-long outings for blind people whom they match up with, I think, volunteer but good skiers, and they go on week-long ski trips. Now, not to be confused with downhill skiing. This is Nordic or cross-country. It's really sort of like hiking on skis. Gravity, of course, take you downhill, but you got to get up the hill by yourself. I'm told that you don't need any prior ski knowledge, just kind of the willingness to do so. I don't think there's any physicals involved. Your body, you yourself are to know whether you're capable of it. I understand that on their next outing, I think, is in February in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And they say usually they have maybe 100 participants. Or 100 blind people and about 100 or so guides. It's all one-on-one. And then they also do a thing where they can accommodate 10 or so mobility impaired people. So it sounds quite interesting. I've never skied, never snow skied in my life, but I'm not saying it wouldn't be a bad deal. Key words on this subject are ski for light. Go read about it on the internet. And that's this week's Look on the Blind Side. I'm Don Patterson.
On the Blind Side, answering questions nobody asks. Contact information. The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind like me. Blind like me. Lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind like me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind like me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information.
And I live when a new surprise surrenders. Feel it all with a willing heart. Every stop, there's a place to start. If you know how to play the part with feeling, I play with feeling. Why don't you wander and follow La-Vida song on the night?
All right, back for another session with Dr. Bob. I knew him as Robert. They call him Dr. Bob now on the radio, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. So we have you now to age 16, and your vision is gone, and I'm sure that you had all sorts of thoughts. What in the world am I going to do now?
Well, let me tell you what my family, if you asked, the 16 is the year that I was at the state school in Austin.
Uh-huh.
And I went down there, and they had this thing called the opportunity room. And I guess that was a sort of a kind term for it. That's where you were supposed to learn Braille. And the nice lady said, I asked her, how long is it going to take? And she says, 2 years. And that seemed a little long to me. So I got me a history book out of the library, and I got me a book that just had all the Braille signs in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sped up the process a little bit. It took me a couple of months. I stayed in the 10th grade down there, and I obviously knew that I was not going to inherit millions of dollars and be able to live in luxury, and I also knew that I did not want to be on public assistance.
Yeah.
So my reasoning was that whatever I do, I have got to make it in a world that is not blind. The world is not designed for blind people. In fact, you could actually make a pretty good argument it's designed contrary to their interests.
Yes, it is.
So I had to function in a sighted world.
And you knew that at 16?
I knew that at the age 16. I did know that. I would go back in the public school.
You made that decision. Your parents didn't make it. You made it.
No, I made the decision.
Okay.
The school system agreed. They didn't have to, but they did.
Didn't have to at that time, no.
No, they did not have to. And so I came back. And I enrolled in the Tyler High School and graduated the Tyler High School in 1959. And there's a story about most of the things that have ever happened in my life, and here is my graduation story. They wanted me to walk independently all the way in, all the way across stage.
Like the sighted kids do.
And we rehearsed it. We practiced it. Graduation. And the stage is about 15 feet above the orchestra pit. And so what they had not, in all the times we'd rehearsed it, you walked right at the edge of the stage, and you walk in front of the superintendent of schools, and he gives you the diploma, and you walk across the other side, somebody takes your picture, you go down the steps. Well,
I know where you're going.
They put some flowers up. Now, they weren't flowers. They were plants, bushes.
Yeah.
Big old pieces of vegetation. So I'm going up, and I feel the bushes. Well, now then I do a bit of reasoning. Okay. Do you walk in front of the bushes, or do you walk behind the bushes? And in my 18-year-old at that time mind, I thought, okay, this is high school graduation, the biggest thing in our young lives, yet you walk in front of the bushes.
Wrong,
yep. I discovered that the falling bodies accelerate at 16 feet per second per second. So I fell down to the orchestra pit, didn't hurt myself, and the stage had a superstructure. And so I could jump up and reach the superstructure. I knew it had the superstructure because when we had the senior play, I'd seen it down there. So I grabbed hold of the superstructure, climb up the superstructure, get back on the stage, and walk across.
And the audience, what was the reaction of the audience?
Well, they started hollering, I think. A couple of them, they might have screamed a little bit. I don't guess some of them were too sure I was going, I wasn't meant to fly that
That's
way.
That's funny.
And and then, I think they clapped, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's what I remember about my high school graduation.
Well, let me second back to our year in the blind school we spent together. We shared at that time, and still do, a common interest. Both of us were in love with radio.
We were indeed.
We were radio people, and I can remember I had an old amplifier and a little mixer there and a couple of turntables.
You sure did.
And we would set up on Friday nights.
We
and,
sure would.
And I would be the disc jockey and he would be the newscaster.
Yes.
And we would do radio all night long, just sitting there.
Darn sure would.
No, nobody could hear it except he and I, and we would sit there all night long and drink coffee and do radio. That was,
We used KTSB.
We used KTSB.
We called it KTSB. I never would. I thought that was a little too flip.
Well, it was better than Whoosh Boosh.
It was. That's because I had an amateur radio license. Mine was WGBZ.
And we couldn't come up with anything out of WGBZ.
No, you really couldn't.
I remembered that. I thought that's kind of amazing. I remembered his case. And you don't have your ham call anymore, do you?
No, I don't. When I got back to Tyler, I was pretty active, actually, for a while. When I got my, I guess I had my first class when I was down there.
Yeah, you did.
This was the International Geophysical Year in the Antarctic, 57 and 58. And so they had a thing called MARS, Military Affiliated Radio
Service. I remember that.
And so I had schedules Friday night overnight. And there was another night I had it overnight. And I don't remember what the other night was. But I would do telephone patches for people who were at the various stations in the Antarctic. And I had I just had this schedule. I did them, and we rotated through them. And the other night, whichever night it was, I did American bases in the Pacific. I did Guam. I think we had some little thing on Wake Island. I think I did it. and I did something else in the Carolinas. I don't remember what it was. And I did that. So at any rate, the ruling at that time was that you had to have been active within the past 5 years to renew your license. Well, about 61, when I kind of got serious about going to college, I ran out of time because I was also working at the time. And I kind of lied in 66 when it came time to renew the license and said I had. I hadn't, but said I had. Well, then I had begun teaching then. And in 71, I really didn't feel like just lying again so I could keep the license, so I let it lapse. I started to get back into it in the late 70s, but I didn't, and so I let the license go.
Tell, just, we won't dwell on this, one more little quick Robert Peters story, blind school. We were, the station in Cameron at 1330 had just come on.
Right.
You and I were laying in a room on, we lay Saturdays, you know, they didn't have anything for you to do on Saturday, so we just laid around. And so we were laying on the bed talking, and the carrier at the Cameron station dropped out, and Bob jumped off the bed and turned around and started moving the radio. What are you doing? Let's see if I can hear KDOK and Tyler.
That's right.
That's
exactly right.
You wanted to see if you could, because that, at that time we were AMDX fools. You know?
We were indeed. And, oh, my goodness, I can remember the some of the stations we could get on real clear nights here. You could pick up WCBS in New York.
You could at 880?
880, and you could get, and I one time I got WRCA, which was 660. I never did get WOR, or I never did get WABC, which was 710 and 770. But, yes, you got them all. You really could.
Well, 770 Albuquerque was on, I guess, at that time, so you couldn't.
Yeah, that was KOB.
Have to null them out. But now the man-made noise is so bad, and there's so many stations on it, the AMDXing is just, you know, it's,
and there's not much on it worth listening.
Not much to hear, is there?
No, there's not.
All right. Well, let's get you to college. You said you were working before you made the decision to go to college. What were you doing? You got out of high school.
Well,
what
I got out of
do?
High school. I worked in a film processing laboratory that processed motion picture film, 8 and 16 millimeter film.
In the dark room.
Sir?
In the dark room.
In the dark room. Yeah, we had this. They came on rolls, and then some of them came in little magazines, or I guess you'd call it a cassette now, but it was a metal magazine you had to take screws out of and take the film out, and you had to hold that thing in your hand to roll it. So the way they processed motion picture film is you had to put it on a large spool. It had to stay in the dark all the time. And the spool was inside a cast iron covered magazine that you screwed the top on. That kept it, you know, out of the light. And then they put it on this this machine that was about 30 feet long. And the machine was just you know,
continuous
rank
feet.
After rank after rank of rollers. And the rollers took the film through the chemicals. And so you ran, you know, my job was to load the film into the magazine. Either off of the small Kodak magazines that were in the magazine cameras, or they had some open reel cameras. So that was my job. And we had there was a process by which you separated different film lots. You put a piece of white leader in between them, and you used a stapler. You just stapled it together. And you had a little thing on one side that you cranked, and it was not automatic. You cranked it by hand, and you cranked the film off the roll it came from, you know, the person that shot, onto the magazine. And then I could put about 1,000 feet onto a magazine. Well, I did that. I did that for several years. And then for a while,
Let me pause there just a second. That's something they thought blind people could do because you didn't need eyesight to do it.
And actually, other sighted people couldn't really do it very well.
We have two of our folks that do the Blind Handyman Show with me did that for years, worked at Fox Photo, and did that kind of thing.
And sighted people really could not do it that well.
Because they have to see to do it.
Because they thought they had to see to do it. I did that, and then I was the office deputy for the Smith County Sheriff's Department overnights one year.
The what?
I was the office deputy for the Sheriff's Department. I did the dispatching, answered telephone calls, that thing. I did that from 6 till 6, 6 o'clock at night till 6 o'clock in the morning. Did that for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I kept a church office one summer. And I did those things, and I started to college, actually, the year I graduated high school, but I worked all the way through college.
Yeah.
And I paid just about all of my own way.
All right, before we get you to college, we need to take just a little short thing here. So basically what you were doing there is things that would never have been able to support you in the style that you wanted to
become accustomed to.
That is right. So obviously there was another major decision made here. And we'll take that in just a minute, a little short break, back in just a second.
All right, sir.
No, go on.
Website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blindsight, here's Don Shaw.
Are you like me? You like keeping up with the latest in technologies? If you do, go and check out www.cnet.com and take a look at them. They have all the latest in computers, electronics. They own downloads.com. If you need to download a program or your favorite utility, you can go there and download that. Information on electronics, if you're going to buy a new TV, stereo, you can get ratings on whatever products you want to buy. Just in general, for electronics, they're an excellent site to check out. I would give them a screen reader friendliness of a 5, and that 5 is just mostly because they have just tons of links on their site. Anyway, that's my pick of the week. I'm Don Shaw. Until next time, keep on web sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
Visiting with Robert Peters, Dr. Bob Peters, on our show, Blind Like Me, and we've got him now to making this big decision about the rest of his life was going to be. Go ahead, Bob.
All right. When I started college, my idea was that I was going to become a simultaneous foreign language interpreter. Because I actually thought I could do that. I was moderately good at Spanish in high school. In fact, they had some kind of, national test I took. And I think I finished 10th out of maybe 11 or
really?
11,000 or some big number. But, I was pretty good at that. But I could not get Braille textbooks. So I knew that wouldn't work. I also thought I could probably teach. And so when I was a junior, after I'd given up on the idea of becoming a simultaneous interpreter, I decided I'd prepare for teaching. So I did that, got a bachelor's degree. I also knew that public schools were not going to employ me, although I did teach briefly in one for a semester, I think. And that was all right. It was, you know, it was not unsuccessful. It was this was just a, you know, a substitution thing.
But you had a B.A. in what?
I had a B.A. in history and a minor in English, I think. And then I came back to Tyler. I went to Tyler Junior College in 59, 60, 61, and then I went to TCU 61, 62, and I was a professional dishwasher there. I washed dishes. Three meals a day for 15 months. Then I graduated August of 62. I did go out to Texas Tech in Lubbock to look at a Master of Social Work. They were doing that and hiring people in vocational rehabilitation agencies, mm-hmm. but I didn't like them and they didn't like me. So I didn't know anything about that. And so when I graduated, I went to work for the newspaper here, writing obituaries, and at that time the newspaper owned the radio station, and that's how I got in the radio business.
At that time, the newspaper owned the 600.
Yeah, KTBB. TBB stands for T.B. Butler, the company that publishes the newspaper.
You told me that years ago, and I forgot it. I'm sorry.
That's what it is, KTBB.
And so that's how you came to do the weather on KTBB.
Yeah, I actually started doing news. We did at 11:05 at night. We did a local news reading on the air.
At 11:05?
11:05 at night.
That's an odd time.
Well, it was after the ABC news at 11.
Okay.
And from the city room of the Tyler Morning Telegraph, the, what did we call that thing? I don't know, 11:05 reading of the news.
So you were the Dan Rather of Tyler there for...
I guess kind of was.
Yeah.
Had a little telephone operator's headset
mm-hmm.
that I wore. To read it, or to do it, and since I had written it, you know, I kind of knew it.
Wait a minute. We're talking local news here.
Local news, yeah.
So you could write the story yourself.
I wrote the story.
And you read it in Braille.
Well, I just made notes and kind of talked it.
And you had they had put you a microphone over to the newsroom of the newspaper.
Well, they had a leased wire.
Okay.
That's how we had our police radio. See, when it carried the police radio signal from the radio station to the newspaper on a leased wire, and then when I did the news, well, we turned the police radio off, and I did the news over the leased wire going the other way.
So it sounded good.
Yeah, it really kind of did.
Yeah.
But we did, instead of using a microphone, we had a microphone, an amplifier, but we had a guy who had been in the Marines and who came stomping up the stairs one night and told a few people what he thought of their ancestry. And he was right in front of the microphone, and it came out very clearly. So we replaced the microphone with a telephone operator's headset, which meant we didn't get all the background.
All right.
And so I did that, and I started doing weather. The way I got into weather is rather odd. In 1962, we were not on daylight saving time down here. And the Weather Service operated on daylight saving time regardless. And so when time changed, the forecast came too late. So somebody had to write one. There were three of us up there that night. We sort of pooled our intelligence and decided who was least ignorant about it and thought maybe I might have been. So that's how I started doing that.
And that's how you became the official weatherman for Smith County.
That's where I started.
Now, of course, eventually they stopped doing that 11. That big long newscast went out of vogue.
Now that did.
And I
did the news, I guess, for... Well, I don't remember. A couple of years, maybe. And so then I, in the meantime, I went to the Stephen F. Austin State College at Nacogdoches. I rode down on the bus every other day. Did my work for a master's degree, got it in 64, finished my master's degree, and I was working at the newspaper, and I was making $75 a week, and I thought I'd won the war on poverty.
And this was, you had a master's degree in history?
Master's degree in history.
And working at the newspaper for $75 a week.
And that was median household income.
Sure it was.
In 64, and I really thought I'd won the war on poverty. So I make another decision, and this is in 65, and that is that I really wanted to teach, and I knew if I was going to teach, I was going to have a doctorate. So I went down to Austin, and they agreed to accept me, and I spent 65, 66 in Austin in residence. You had to do a year in residence. came back, was fortunate enough to get a job at the junior college here, and it just so happened, what happened was we had a lady who was teaching, and she left. Her husband got a job in Arlington, I think, as a city judge up there, so they were short somebody, and I knew it. And, in fact, actually, I knew it because it was on the news that night, because I was about to read it on the news.
Yeah.
That so-and-so had been appointed city judge at Arlington, and I immediately, and I was about to go to Austin, actually, to do some work at the university, and on the way to the bus station from the newspaper, I drop a letter in the post office applying for the job, and I was out of town for 3 days and got back, and they'd called, and I had it. So I began teaching in 1966. I did my residency work in Austin in 65, 66, come back to Tyler in 66. I've been at the junior college ever since 66, and I've continued working for the newspaper and radio. I finally, writing a dissertation, well, it took me, let's see, I think 4 years maybe, to get my coursework out of the way where they were satisfied. You did your written examinations as you finished a field. You had to have 5 fields. And you did your written examination as you finished a field. And then when they were satisfied that you were ready, then you sat for your orals. And I did that in May of 69. And then I spent the next 8 years on the dissertation. I finished it in 77. And I got my doctorate then, and I taught until in the classroom until 93, and then in 93 I began doing what we call distance instruction. At that time it was video cassette tapes. Well, to go back a little bit, in 1972, I actually made some video instructional tapes that were used for about 4 or 5 years. I've been told that was the first state-funded television instruction, post-secondary television instruction in Texas, because we got a state grant to do it. And it looked like something I did. It's pretty sorry. It looked like something you and your brother-in-law went out in the garage on Saturday night after a six-pack and did.
But you had a cameraman, you see, or did you?
I had a cameraman. In fact, I had 2 cameras. And then I had, we used map slides, and I had an assistant in there, and she was the map slide person, and then she was the pointer.
You would say what it was, and she would point to it.
She would point to it on the map, yeah. It was kind of primitive.
Well, see, I've tried to get my channel here to let me do the weather on Channel 9. A high-pressure ridge over Kansas and have a lovely girl pointing. We get some national press on it if they don't seem to see it.
They don't.
Anyway, go ahead.
So, okay, I did that in 72, and they used those tapes through 76, and then, you know, it came time to redo them, and, you know, we were not equipped to do the kind of quality that thing needed. So, Dallas County Community College District took it over and actually contracted it out to PBS. We started them. Then in 93, I got back into doing the television instruction, but these were, you know, tapes that PBS had done. And I was out of the classroom. I did that for 3 years. And then in 96, I became the department chairman of the social sciences department. I was going to retire in 96 because I was eligible, but I didn't. And so I became social science department chairman, and then I, you know, we had a couple of other little changes, and in 99 I became dean of university school, which is the college transfer courses. And I have been that since. And I've got about 6,000 students and probably 500 employees. That are faculty and support staff and lab assistants and student assistants and all that I've got responsibility for. A couple of ancillary things. I've got a planetarium and I'm about to get me a daycare center. I never thought I'd ever have a daycare in my life.
Now, you're personally about to open a daycare center?
I'm about to open a daycare center.
Well,
college is.
The college is.
Yeah, the college is.
All right.
But I'm responsible for it.
Okay.
And in fact, I spent yesterday afternoon interviewing applicants for it. And I've got a daycare and I've got a greenhouse and got a performance venue that we rent out. And you know, it's really a very challenging thing, and I enjoy it.
Well, before we run out of time, we haven't said very little about your adult personal life. Are you married? Do you have children?
Yes, I'm married to a very lovely lady who is currently going to Pennsylvania. She is going up there for the weekend. She left out of town about an hour ago.
Listen, I could be there by noon. And I'll bring the whiskey.
I'm afraid she would know. She's a little concerned about how to get from the airport to where she's going, and I suspect she's going to call me.
I would imagine.
Which way do I go on Highway 476? Well, that's why you printed the directions. Look at them.
Well,
I'm married. I've got two children.
Oh, yeah?
I've got a boy who is a DPS officer. And I have got a girl who is in school at North Texas in Denton. And then my boy has got three children. I've got a granddaughter who is 15, a grandson who just turned 8, and a granddaughter who just turned 3. And, you know, we have tried. I liked what I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy did not go to work until the children were out of the house. And, you know, we tried to give them what we'd had. And they're very creditable young people. And I have been very fortunate. My favorite comments reference Judy are, she told me before I got married, she said, "Peters, you have 100 ideas a day, 98 of which are promptly worth forgetting." And the other thing that what I say about her is that she's an extremely intelligent woman. I know why she became attracted to me the first time she saw me, because I'm, you know, moderately nice. It was that second day that she stayed with me that I kind of wonder about her sanity.
They talk about how smart my wife is. I tell everybody, how smart could she be? She married me.
That's right. But, you know, I'm very fortunate. We own a house, and I'm sitting in the middle of it. I don't owe any money on it.
Well, you know, there's no question that you had some good beginnings, and you were lucky in a lot of ways, but you've accomplished a lot. You've done a lot on your own.
I think what I did, I came along, I happened to be a number of places at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I are of the Depression generation.
Yeah.
And about the time that I came to maturity and had the qualification, the baby boom generation was beginning to hit college. They were short teachers. The department chairmanship became vacant, I had an earned doctorate in my discipline, and I have been published. I have 9 books that are mine.
And you have 9 that you've already written, and you're working on a 10th.
Well, I finished the 9th one.
Oh, you finished that was what you were going to do while we had to delay this.
Yeah, that's why we had to delay this. I had to work on that last Friday. Well, no, last Friday I had to be in Austin.
You have written, let me just say this, you have written 9 books.
Yes.
All on all educational books?
No, there's 2 that are history and 7 that are state government.
State government.
Texas state government.
They say author Bob Peters.
Yes.
Dr. Bob.
Robert K. Peters.
I did not know that. That's wonderful.
Well, I want 10.
I think
you ought to have 10. I ought to have an even number.
Well, if you're going to do it, you ought to have an even number.
And I'll probably get another contract next year. When the department chairmanship came open, you know, I was published. I've got an earned doctorate in discipline, and so I qualified that. And I have some ability at nuts and bolts of things. You know, grand big picture items I don't do, but nuts and bolts, as I tell my folks, all I can do is make the trains run on time, but I can do that.
Okay, before we run out of time, I just want to ask this one question. What, this is out of left field, what would you think would be the biggest obstacle as a blind person you or a blind person must overcome?
The fact that the world is not designed for you, and the world is becoming less and less friendly insofar as surrounding its environment for blind individuals. I, you know, when I was became blind, we had intercity transport. It was readily available. It is no longer. The devices let's just take my microwave stove in there. Well, I have figured out how to run it because I put little pieces of scotch tape on the push, touch pad
thing. I know.
I think that is it, and it's no, you know, nobody got up this morning and said, well, we're gonna mess around with blind folks.
Screw blind people.
And they're not saying. I mean, nobody did that. But the simple fact is that the technology for visual operation of things is what is, you know, it's what's easily done, and it is what 99.99% of the folks in this here republic are going to buy. If you have to, you know, a sale of a product or operation of a service, if it is only for the blind, it'll never be profitable, it'll never make money, it'll never fly, and it'll never exist. For blind people to have access, you've got to have a technology that they can use without modification, and that technology is not there.
Yet.
And I wouldn't bet the rent money on it showing up.
Well, see, I said we could do 2 hours. We really could. Are you computer? Do you fool with computers?
Yes, I do.
Do you now?
Yes. In fact, I've got, I guess I got 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
I use one at the office, and I've got one sitting right over here about 8 feet from me, and then I've got a little laptop, because when I go out of town, and I've say humorously sometimes, I think the only reason in the world the state of Texas collects a sales tax is to buy me plane tickets. I travel quite a bit. And when I'm out of town, I do the news and weather from the hotel room. Mm-hmm. And I've got a little laptop, a little portable radio stuff that I carry with me.
But you do not have a degree, and you're not a meteorologist.
No, I am not.
You simply look at the data and
41 years of fooling with it, and I have read the textbooks.
Yeah.
That, you know, are used. And I try to keep up pretty well.
The same ones the meteorologist read to get
there. In other words, if you were going to school to get a BA and a BS in meteorology, I can't say I'm as current as I was maybe 10 years ago. And that's honesty. But I have read that and understand it. And so I read the data. And that's how I do it. And, of course, you get that off the computer.
Yeah,
let's go further. There was a brief period before the popularity of the graphical user interface, 1991 to 1993, when I think blind people in the sighted community were actually pretty well equal as far as computers were concerned, DOS operation. Everything.
Yeah,
but with the increased popularity, and in fact, you know, of the Windows operating system. And the graphical nature of very much of what is displayed on the internet, and it's a graphical thing that there's no way in this world, there's no physical way that even if you had the best of intentions and the best of hearts and the greatest of desires and you wanted to and you had $1 million to throw at it, there's no way you can make that accessible to a blind person. You cannot make a picture or a map or most types of graphing available to a blind person. You simply can't do it. You can't do it.
It's not ever going to be done.
No, it cannot now, nor will it ever be. So I think, and this is why and I'm glad I'm as old as I am. And I really am.
I am.
And, you know, a lot of people worry about age and things. I get up and think about it, and I figure, well, I probably got less to live than I've done.
I'm happy to be 62.
I am 62.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad I did what I did when I did it, and I'm glad I don't have to do it all over again.
Let's on that note, we are out of time. What I want to do is have you back in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 2 months, and we'll just start from here, and talk more about your adult life, because we spent a lot of time on your childhood. They know you pretty well now, don't they? Huh?
And those that stuck with it long enough and had thrown something at their computer while they listened to this.
Our premise, the purpose of this show is to put forth the thought that blindness is an inconvenience. It is not a handicap, and that's exactly
what it
is.
And that is correct.
I believe that someone may put it more eloquently, but that's my thinking. It is an inconvenience, and a hell of an inconvenience sometimes, but it's not a handicap. You can do it.
You can do it.
Dr. Bob, thank you much, and I'll be listening this afternoon. Will you be on this afternoon on KQBB?
I'll be on this afternoon, yes, sir. I certainly shall.
Is KQBB on the internet? Are they?
KDOC is on the internet. We're on the internet sometimes. We got in trouble with that advertising
thing
where the commercial makers wanted actors' equity pay.
But if it's there, it's KDOK.com.
KDOKF. I don't know if it's KDOK.com or KDOKFM.com.
Well, you could try both, and there'll be a time, maybe not today, but there'll be a time when you can hear Dr. Bob doing the weather.
You sure can.
KDOK.
In fact, if you want to call 903-534-4499 or 903-533-0600, you can hear it on the telephone.
Amazing. Thank you much, sir, and we'll be talking with you in a few weeks.
That's cool.
Well, that is my friend from Tyler, Dr. Bob Peters, who does still does the weather on three or four stations up there on the talk stations around Tyler, Longview, and Marshall, and that area of the world. We call it DB Texas. I did not know when we started that conversation that he was dean of the college up there. That's quite an accomplishment. Anyway, Dr. Bob, next week we will talk to a lady who went back to school at age, I think, 40-something and she got a degree in psychology, and she is a psychotherapist. I can't remember exactly what her degree is, but we'll talk with her next week. blindlikeme@txucom.net. blindlikeme@txucom.net. Email us if you'd like to be a guest, if you know somebody that would like to be a guest. And remember those stories. We'll do that. blindlikeme@txucom. See you next time. More Blind Like Me.